Hey, Ryan Reynolds here. Wishing you a very happy half-off holiday because right now, Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So, that means a half day, yeah?
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speeds low after 35 gigabytes of networks busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Brandon Thurston from WrestleNomics is up next, and we're going to follow Brandon with John Pollock from Post Wrestling.
Delivering on the returns, increasing our margins.
Ratings go down the toilet if I'm not here.
All I do is simply put the math in my favor.
We agree that Brandon and John do good work.
The reason is simple wrestling economics.
I've been told the Netflix numbers. I've been told the metrics a little bit, probably five different times. I still don't get it.
There were respectable wrestling journalists who needed answers.
Thank you very much, members of the media. I hope you all go to hell.
How about we pop a number right here, right now?
Whole part of the show, man.
Welcome to Pollock and Thurston. It's John Pollock and Brandon Thurston here with you on this Wednesday afternoon where we have a lot to break down. TNA Wrestling had a hell of a week. Mm-hmm. TKO had a hell of a week in New York City.
They always do.
Madison Square
I saw that, you know what I saw this morning, or I don't know, it was yesterday or whenever they did their Polymarket announcement. Mark and Ari and Dana were all at the stock exchange.
They were. Do you want to quickly explain what Polymarket is?
No.
These are the prediction market, which is sweeping the nation. And, you know, you can just bet on anything from when is the next attack in Gaza going to occur. You can make money off of this.
Is that really there?
Oh, yeah. You can make predictions on this type of thing. So, you know, this is the future of our investment strategies and how you can work all the angles of international conflict and also bet on maybe more pedestrian type of outcomes to happen in the world. Like
there are competitors to this, right? I've seen Kelshi, is that what it's called?
Yes. They I think Polymarket is maybe this is one of Mark Shapiro's two big partnerships that were going to be announced before the end of the year. We've got Polymarket. Who could be next? Rounding out this year.
I don't know. The Crown Prince is in the country.
We're going to be talking about the Crown Prince because he stopped by the White House. And that meant Jamal Khashoggi was back in the news as well. And very, very measured response from the President of the United States of America. So there you get every that's your trigger warning, folks. There will be Trump talk later. But first, we are talking about the rematch that went down on Tuesday afternoon. An hour and 20 minutes. They weren't going to be confined to a 60-minute Broadway. It was Ariel Helwani welcoming AEW President Tony Khan into his studio. And we have to give some history why this was such an issue in the past. Because back in 2022... Helwani did an interview with Tony Khan, which he would later call the most frustrating of his career. And to say the least, there seemed to be tensions between Ariel Helwani and AEW after this. AEW guests not exactly populating Ariel's various platforms. But slowly, more AEW talent have been popping up on his show over the recent months. But after their interview, you may recall that Ariel Helwani showed up. He was doing work at WWE at the Elimination Chamber show.
It was around the time of when we were both in Montreal. Yeah.
Yes. This was the Elimination Chamber show in 2023. And Khan and Ariel decided to take to Twitter and go back and forth. We had,
that always makes things better.
Yes. A snowman reference was made, and it seemed as though, much like the snowman, that things were very icy between these two. And
the wrestler who feuded with Jerry Lawler in Memphis, that snowman?
That was it. Exactly. Yes.
Okay.
So all these years later, Tony Khan, not going to join him remotely, this time coming into the Lion's Den. He was going to join him in studio. And to say this was like a 180 from the first interview, I won't go so far. Like, this was not as though this was Tony Khan just no holds barred, was just going to bare his soul. I mean, this was, how would you describe this transformation of Tony Khan that we have seen over the last 18 months when it comes to a public profile? Because I think this interview sort of encapsulates everything we have seen from Tony Khan in terms of go into an interview and don't come out of it making any types of waves that are going to deviate from the product in a negative sense.
Yeah, I would say, would you say we've seen three different phases of the public facing Tony Khan, where there's been, I would say, when AEW was new and on the rise and CM Punk was coming in and into, you know, 2021, they were doing really well. And he was more forthright, I would say, sometimes to his detriment, but more forthright. And then at some point, maybe around the time of when issues arose with CM Punk, he became more closed off and more, very willing to talk, but not very willing to say very much. And then since the beginning of this year or so, I would say he's become more careful about taking shots at WWE. I would say he's not as active on Twitter and with anything other than promoting AEW. So I would say that this interview, and I've listened to it all, that this was the most substantive conversation I've heard him have in a long time.
I'd agree with you. I think that Tony Khan is a very difficult interview because he will, like, his focus is always that this promotional opportunity is to direct people to watch his programming. And that's always going to be his North Star, no matter what you ask him. You could be talking about growing up in Champaign, Illinois, and it will segue to Dynamite tonight, TBS, HBO Max, 8 p.m. Eastern time. I mean, that just comes with the Tony Khan. Like, he is there to promote the product, and there's no fault in that. And it is sometimes difficult to get, you know, real substantive information out of him that the viewer is going to be most attracted to. In this interview, first of all, it was obviously a much more cordial interaction between these two. And I think for Tony Khan, I think he sees a big platform here and a chance to, you know, it made more sense for him to make amends here.
Things had been repaired enough that Darby Allin was on Ariel's show recently. I think others had been interviewed by him, right?
Yeah, and I think it's also worth noting the fact that WWE was all over New York this week, and like, it was AEW that was represented on Ariel's show. It was not like he was having WWE guests on this week, and I don't know if that says anything, but certainly this was a case of Tony coming on, and I think largely what we have seen over this last year or so has been it's like there is so much ammunition that he could fire back at WWE over head-to-head competition and how the company has been aggressively targeting him. Like, he's got all these bullets in the chamber, but he is not opting to go that direction. He does not look like, if I make this interview about WWE, that's going to be the focus. And I don't want the focus to be WWE. So it's almost a kill him with kindness type of philosophy that, yeah, it's head-to-head competition, but that's okay. And when my former talent all post a photo, that makes me smile. You're not going to get this guy to break, that he is no selling any of this. And maybe those are his honest feelings, but he's not going to come out. This is not online Tony Khan that a number of years ago that would be firing shots at WWE and taking his
going that aggressive stance. Jim Crockett.
Yeah, like, that is not the version of Tony Khan. And I would say that, like, this is, like, he is coming on as just, I am the measured president that is not going to get overly emotional about this. This is just business, and they have every right to do this, and he is not going to create waves.
Yeah. I would say both Ariel and Tony came off very well here. And this was a different kind of conversation than, you know, most of us are used to listening to on the media calls. There'll be another one tomorrow, where we get various questions and you can go on pretty long tangents that maybe talk about storylines or something like that. And it leads to a lot of praising of wrestlers and great matches and great feuds and great, pay-per-views and things of that nature. But we, you know, he was, I think Ariel was very careful to measure questions that were real questions, including about CM Punk. We heard the most, I think, Tony has said about CM Punk since Punk left. But he was very careful to say, it's not me saying this, but, you know, asking a question that is a challenging question.
Let's hear from Tony Khan and a portion of his answer regarding CM Punk. And when Punk had come on Ariel's show about a year and a half ago and kind of ran down Tony and described him as a boss that, to paraphrase, gets walked over, that talent would not necessarily respect. Like, Punk was very dismissive of Tony Khan in terms of him being a leader of this company.
Everybody's entitled to their opinion, and that's feedback, and it's fair if that's how he feels. But I didn't agree with the description of the way things played out, and that's okay. And that's all in the eye of the beholder. Just like the whole situation, if you see the way it came out, it all was in the eye of the beholder, and that's okay. I think AEW is doing really well right now, and I'm really happy with what the people on the shows are doing. And it wasn't the first time that he and I disagreed about something, and it may not ever be the last, and that's okay. But I had tried to reconcile, and I wanted to find a way for everybody to be able to work together, and that didn't work, and that's okay. And it seems like everybody's happier and doing better right now. I know in AEW right now, everybody's really happy, and if
that sounds to me as a response that easily just could have been lifted off of the like Death Valley Driver message board in the early 2000s. You know, hey, it's in the eye of the beholder. Those names you're calling me are, that's feedback. I don't necessarily agree with it, but that's fine. We're all happy here.
That was an autocomplete in the text field when you're posting on the message board. No, I think that was a good response. That he's been asked that question a few times over the last couple of years. He could have said that, something like that, and it would have been fine, but he's been, you know, more evasive, and it sounds like there's NDAs or something involved in this. I don't know.
I'll say, one thing I will give him here, and there were several of these instances when it came to like contract status and stuff that he was not going to get into with Andrade and Jericho, but largely, like, I think that was the source of a lot of Helwani's frustration in the first interview, was not even entertaining the question. Just, I can't talk about that. I can't talk about that. And as the interview subject, you can have maybe one of those in an interview, but when they're constant, like, you have to give a little. And when you don't, you get what happened 3 years ago, and it's just hitting your head against a wall in an interview. In this, like, honestly, he can come a lot stronger at Punk that, you know, he could easily state, listen, everyone saw this security footage. What was I to do in this situation? A leader took action and removed this problem that you're seeing on this security footage from my locker room. And we have a, frankly, much happier locker room. This individual seems to be a lot happier where he is now. Great. But what, like, Tony Khan made the situation, he eliminated the problem in 2023.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it was nonetheless a good idea to air the footage on his television show, even though he explains this and justifies it as it did a great rating. And it did pop a quarter hour. Now, is it worth the PR hit that you take because of it? Which I think leads us to a question that is sort of touched on in this interview about, you know, why do people go after AEW in, you know, particularly the retired wrestlers, the legendary wrestlers who have numerous podcasts talking about AEW, and clearly AEW is a lightning rod for engagement online in the algorithms. And we've talked about this before, but I think it's, you know, I think there's something about, there's just many factors that make it great to have an opinion, and people really want to engage with it because they feel strongly one way or the other. There's just a diversity of opinions about this. And I think when you throw in this sort of, I I want to call it like a progressive vision of wrestling that is more about the match quality and gets into the casual fan argument. And it's this alternative flavor of wrestling that the incumbent power in wrestling is opposed to philosophically. And then you layer into it, you know, there's a billionaire son who's involved in this and all of the tensions that are around, you know, economic differences and the great privileges that people who are billionaires and people who are the 1% have. And I think all of that just sort of makes for this cocktail of engagement.
Yeah, I've given this a lot of thought because it always comes up that you look at, you know, why this specific pocket just has such a radar on Tony Khan specifically, because it's very rare that you have these same critics that go toward the talent in a large sense. It's like Tony Khan is the embodiment to a lot of these personalities in wrestling, that he represents everything that they had a disdain for, but would largely keep under check. Pro wrestling fan that loves high quality wrestling, read the newsletters, and is somebody that just all these things that it was almost like a mark of shame. If you actually watch this stuff for the enjoyment of professional wrestling at its highest level, like that is, you know, in a lot of like pro wrestling, there is that, like thumbing your nose at that type of wrestling fan that is seeking out pro wrestling at the level like a Tony Khan is. Tony Khan is much closer to the ticket paying audience than any of these people are that have not bought a ticket to pro wrestling in decades, if not longer.
And I think in terms of personality too, there's something for them to make fun of and to criticize. And he's sort of this microcosm of all that stuff that has been simmering and marinating in wrestling discourse for decades. Plus when you put algorithms on top of it, that reward engagement and reward strong feelings, then you've got a great way to make money.
On the head-to-head topic, he was asked about WWE and its counter-programming strategy, which they have somewhat gotten away from of late, but was certainly prevalent throughout the summer months using NXT and then going even stronger with WrestlePalooza back in September.
I do think it's done on purpose, and I understand it, and it's part of wrestling, and I think we've seen a lot of it, but I think other wrestling promotions that have been the challenger wrestling brand in our lifetime have seen a lot of it. Jim Crockett Promotions, which was the forerunner to WCW, saw a lot of this. And
does it frustrate you?
I think it's okay, because for us, it's always worked out and we're in a great position. So it hasn't ever been a thing where it's cost us anything. And even when you do something like AEW All in Texas, where we do the show in the afternoon, it really worked out for us great, and it was one of the best days in the history of the company. So,
again, to me, it's an example of, like, I don't know how deeply, like, thought out this, like, a Tony Khan is when he goes into a setting like this. Like, I can believe this guy has his talking points and what he is going to go to. But again, there's a lot of ammunition that he could throw out at them of the fact that, well, if you notice on the calendar, they're not going head to head with us anymore. And the fact is that our September pay-per-view did not take any demonstrable hit that we are aware of against a massive premiere on ESPN for WWE, and that they staged a Saturday night's main event on NBC back in July on the same day as All in Texas. And last I checked, NBC is not bringing back Saturday night's main event, and we will be on pay-per-view this coming Saturday.
Yeah. Raises the question whether they had some pushback from their network partners, whether it was NBC Universal or whomever. I mean, it's not something that it would be in anybody's interest to ever confirm. But it does raise the question whether that was, I mean, is that affecting the viewership on Saturday night's main event? Because you're choosing to go against another wrestling program. Now, it doesn't have as big of an impact on WWE probably as it might on AEW. Although when we're talking about pay-per-view, I think that is a different thing. And that is such a hardcore, that's such a hard shell audience to hurt. But it raises that question about whether any of WWE's partners, I mean, when you're putting the NXT PLEs on Peacock against AEW, then it does hurt NXT more than it would a main roster show. So it's, you know, I wonder if you're NBC Universal, why am I allowing you to put on a show that's against another wrestling show that therefore produces a smaller audience for me that's a little bit hard for me to monetize. Why are you insisting on doing this?
And like a question that we don't know the answer to is, what was the true performance of WrestlePalooza in September? That here, like ESPN Unlimited is still in its like very basic rollout phase. But if you are ESPN and maybe you had higher expectations of how that show was going to perform and you're looking for reasons, a very easy one is, well, you decided to go head to head that same day with a wrestling competitor. It's very easy to just look at that and that, like, you're looking for reasons that this would have underperformed. Whether that's a relevant reason or not, those are the factors that you would be assessing. And to this point, we don't have any more scheduled head-to-heads, although I'm not holding my breath that we won't see this revisited next year.
Yeah. And it was something that media did try to ask ESPN executives about in that media call just ahead of WrestlePalooza, but they kind of danced around. So, and again, it's not probably in anybody's interest to say, yeah, we would really prefer if WWE stops doing head-to-head programming with AEW because it'll make our viewership better. So it's just, you know, it's not something I expect anybody to say in this environment.
Never met the kid. Never met the kid.
Yes. I'm sure he appreciates his dad, though.
Last one we're going to touch on was Ariel asking about the performance of AEW and its television viewership with the introduction of Max this year, and Tony assessing their year and also the recent shifts since the introduction of Big Data Plus Panel.
In Q1, Q2, and Q3, if you look, our share went up and our total audience went up.
Okay.
So we have this really great success story. Now, it's interesting because we don't get the same kind of numbers. In Q4, there's been this big change in the Nielsen system.
Yes.
Which is why it was great to see this huge number we did last week for us, because it was like, well, that's the best number we've done since the change. And so clearly, there was a great response to it. But also Collision the previous Saturday had done the best number it had done since the change in this system. So we've really closed the gap. It's kind of like in the pandemic. If you look at where AEW is as a percentage of the WWE shows, this is really one of our strongest runs. And if you look at where WWE is, say the audience of Dynamite compared to SmackDown, for example, or Raw, this is a great time for us. And you would say that along with some of the peak times in AEW, this is right there as 2025 right now, what's happening, that the AEW audience as a percentage of the competition is about as good as it's ever been. And with the streaming audience, like I said at the start of the year, I wasn't sure if the cable audience, if where they would go. And actually with the cable audience at the start of the year, and then again, as the year went on, grew. So that was pretty exciting. And so from the first three quarters, that's the case. And now they track the data differently. So we'll see how this goes. But we're in the fourth quarter, and so far it's been this awesome year.
So if I go to a chat BT, BT being Brandon Thurston, please tell me how that answer correlates with your understanding of how the numbers have fared this year and as a percentage of, well, we should basically talk about SmackDown viewership.
Yeah. Now, Blood and Guts did do a really strong rating relative to recent weeks, most recent.
This was a 600,000 viewers and a 0.15 last Wednesday.
Yes. But I thought it was interesting that he's thinking about this in terms of percentage of WWE. So I put together a chart here, and I chose to use a moving average because that gives us a cleaner look rather than changing over week to week. So this is a moving, you know, 3-month average that we're looking at here for people watching in video. And we do see an increase in, this is Dynamite as a percentage of these WWE programs. And like so many of these TV ratings comparisons now, it's all complicated and made a mess of by the network changes, by Dynamite being simulcast now on Max. We don't know how many people are watching on Max. SmackDown moving from Fox to USA. But now the key comparison here for this type of conversation is SmackDown on USA. And I don't know, since the big data change, there is this, you know, positive slope forward for Dynamite in this comparison here. Now he does say that it's, he gives you the impression that this is the best Dynamite has been doing as a percentage of the W programs as it's ever been. That's definitely not true. We could go back to late 2021, which is, you know, pretty much indisputably the
this is kind of like period. The peak period after Punk has come in, yes. Danielson has come in. Like September 2021 is probably like the high point where they were flirting with Raw's 18 to 49 audience.
And exactly. In the demo, they beat Raw in a few weeks. Now, I'm not looking at the demo here. This is just total viewership, but the trends are going to be the same. And the peak was, again, that late period of 2021, and there are some other spikes here in the late period of 2022 against Raw. Notably, this is when Raw is going against Monday Night Football, so Monday Night Football is impacting Raw's rating. So it is on a positive trend. That is true. You can draw up a positive straight line up and to the right here for Dynamite against SmackDown now that it's been on USA for most of this little over 1 year stretch.
It's November, which means holiday shopping season is officially here. Uncommon Goods takes the stress out of gifting with thousands of unique, high-quality finds that you won't see anywhere else. Their thoughtful curation makes shopping simple. But heads up, popular gifts sell fast, so now's a great time to start crossing those names off of your list. Uncommon Goods offers high-quality, unique items, like the New York Times custom baseball book, a made-to-order collection of historic newspaper pages featuring your favorite team's biggest games, star players, and memorable moments straight from the Times archives. You can even personalize it with a name for that extra special touch. Perfect for that baseball fan who might still need a bit of cheering up from their team's heartbreaking World Series Game 7 loss. Uncommon Goods has something for every kind of person. Book lovers, history buffs, foodies, gardeners. Shopping there supports small makers crafting limited-run handcrafted products. So don't wait. Cross those names off your list before the rush. For 15% off your next gift, head to uncommongoods.com/postwrestling. That's uncommongoods.com/postwrestling for 15% off. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary. This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible. Financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, Rewind Away looks at some of the biggest retirement matches in wrestling history, featuring matches involving Terry Funk, Ric Flair, Sting, and Tam Nakano. Plus, John Pollock and Brandon from New Jersey get together to look back at season 4 of 90210, a season that brought you John Sears, Lucinda Nicholson, David's meth addiction, and Brandon moving in on Kelly Taylor. Book Club will cover This Book Is All Elite by Keith Elliott Greenberg. Plus, we have reviews of TNA Turning Point, UFC 322, and so much more. $6 gets you all this at postwrestlingcafe.com.
So as we kind of look at just closing the lid on this chat that Tony Khan had, again, I would certainly recommend the interview. I think this is one of the more effective interviews that Tony Khan has done. I think that if his goal was to go in here and like it's not a shock that when AEW sets up these interviews, they do not want negative headlines coming out of these types of appearances. And I wouldn't say that they really did in this case. I thought it was Tony Khan. I thought both people realized that the last one was a disaster. And the reason we're doing this is like each is going to meet the other in the middle to have more of a conversation. And I think it probably helped that it was also done in person as well. And yeah, Tony Khan gave him a lot of time. Like, I would say this is probably one of the longer interviews we have heard with Tony Khan in a one-on-one setting.
Yeah, it was nearly an hour, and you know, it's
a lot longer than my first interview where I was given 6 minutes with Tony Khan, and that was you cannot interview Tony Khan in 6 minutes.
Yes, and I think it speaks to Tony's willingness to reconcile with people as he tried to with Punk, you know, to give, you know, certain relationships second chances.
We're going to shift gears to TKO's big week at Madison Square Garden in New York City. So they ran UFC 322 on Saturday night. They announced an attendance of 20,664 and a gate of over $13.6 million. The last number from WrestleTix was 18,344. And this would be among the 10 highest gates at Madison Square Garden, which I think UFC now occupies 8 of the top 10 gates in the history of Madison Square Garden, because Dana White was promoting that after our next two shows, we'll have all top 10. So congratulations, fans. You have soared the UFC to take all 10 of the highest gates in the history of Madison Square Garden. Then Raw, we go 48 hours later.
I love this. I have to mention this. I love this graphic that they've put out where they list the gate to the dollar, $13,624,189 US. And then they have the conversion rates so that everybody across the world understands. This is 19.1 in Canadian dollars. They've got the euros, the pounds, I think this is Australian dollars, the Japanese yen and the Chinese yuan. Is that how you say that?
I think so.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Man, our Canadian dollar is just getting hammered when this is a $19 million dollar gate up here. Yes. Oh my Lord.
Your $1.39 is worth $1 at the moment as of this graphic was made.
Well, that was only night one of TKO's haul in the New York market because 48 hours later, it is John Cena's final Raw. And the last number we got from WrestleTix was 18,110. And do you want to pull up the graphic that WWE put out, the press release announcing the gate figure and all the different currencies of what it drew?
I must have missed that one.
I don't know why they don't promote
these. Because they're smaller than UFC.
You think that's the reason?
You're
probably right. But I would venture to guess, I'd be very comfortable saying at worst, this is probably the top three of all-time arena gates that they have ever drawn in their history. I bet you Monday did better than maybe all WrestleMania arena shows.
So WrestleTix lists this cheapest ticket as 177. So minimum gate we're talking about. Let's say, 17,000 tickets were actually sold. We've got a $3 million gate. And that would be a record, a new arena record, non-stadium record a few years ago, but they've broken that a few times, including the highest known arena gate that we know of. I believe it's $4.8 million for the Raw Netflix debut. And again, this is the cheapest gate that I'm putting a minimum here. It was likely among the biggest arena gates that W has ever done.
Which is quite the number that they accumulated here. And God knows what I want to know the final total of Cena merchandise in 2025.
Yes. We'll put a request for comment in for that.
And then Tuesday night, they did the NXT Gold Rush show at the theater in New York City with just under 3,000, according to WrestleTix. So those are their three nights in New York City. Very profitable one for TKO. And AEW is in basically the same market this weekend because the annual Full Gear event takes place at the Prudential Center in Newark with 8,331 tickets out. WrestleTix reporting last year, the number was 10,094. So I get there's a shot of them outdoing last year's number in these final days. And yes, Tony Khan will hold a media call Thursday.
Yes.
And maybe
expect coverage of it on WrestleMox.com.
Yes. If you get through, will you ask about AEW's future in Saudi Arabia, maybe?
That was discussed here. We glossed over that.
Here's Tony Khan and I think a question he was not expecting.
I do believe off the top of my head, the only major combat sports entity right now that does not have any sort of business relationship with Saudi Arabia. Is there any particular reason for that?
I can't speak to that. I'm not sure. I didn't realize that. But it's interesting. And no, I think AEW, we've got great partnerships. We work with probably some of the same media partners you do. But no, I'm not sure why that would be. But
just a coincidence.
I guess it would. Okay. Yeah, but it's interesting. I never thought of it like that till you said it.
Okay.
So if the GEA called today, you'd say, yeah, let's make a deal.
I mean, Tony Khan is not, he's been very careful. He is not going to put any kind of, any kind of moral barrier in front of AEW. Although the second they strike a deal, man, will that Britt Baker clip be airing, the blood money clip that she, once uttered on AEW programming.
Oh, she did. I don't remember that.
Yeah, she referred to the Saudi blood money, I think. So,
well, she'll have to apologize for that.
Well, that's right, because MBS made his trip to the United States this week, and members of the media got to surround Donald Trump and Mohammed bin Salman, and the name Jamal Khashoggi was brought up. And Donald Trump, obviously taking from the Tony Khan playbook, also being very strategic, very measured with his words, because I know what was going through Donald Trump's mind. However you answer this question, let's not make negative headlines.
And Your Royal Highness, The U.S. intelligence concluded that you orchestrated the brutal murder of a journalist.
As far as this gentleman is concerned, he's done a phenomenal job. You're mentioning somebody that was extremely controversial. A lot of people didn't like that gentleman that you're talking about. Whether you like him or didn't like him, things happen. But he knew nothing about it, and we can leave it at that. You don't have to embarrass our guest by asking a question like that.
Just yes, Mr. President, you allow me to answer. About the journalists, it's really painful to hear, anyone that been losing his life for no real purpose or nothing illegal way. And it's been painful for us in Saudi Arabia. We've did all the right steps of investigation, etc., in Saudi Arabia, and we've improved our system to be sure that nothing happened like that. And it's painful, and it's a huge mistake, and we are doing our best that this doesn't happen again.
Now, I'm just going to say, it takes a remarkable talent to come off less measured than MBS, who sounded like the sane one in those responses to the brutal murder of a journalist back in 2018. But somehow that occurred. And, you know, folks, things happen. Things happen.
A lot of people didn't like that guy.
Yeah. Apparently people in that embassy did not like him either. But hey, this guy's doing tremendous things, and let's just move on, all right? Don't be so rude. Don't insult our guest here, okay?
Yeah. I mean, everybody gets annoyed at journalists, you know. Journalists are the worst. They're terrible people.
Sometimes things need to be done, obviously. So that was the conclusion. But you didn't like MBS is like being the remorseful one here. I was like, what world are we living in here? But there you go. That was MBS's trip to the White House, and Donald Trump having a great week.
Yes, they had a big dinner the next night that I heard Elon Musk was supposed to be at. So
was that photo taken before or after Congress voted on the Epstein files being released?
Before, I think this was.
He gave his blessing, so he can't be too upset, right?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. All right. Huge news coming out of the world of Disney and ESPN, and YouTube, because they have finally come to an agreement, a carriage agreement with YouTube TV's. This comes from Front Office Sports. YouTube TV's multi-year carriage agreement with ESPN parent company Disney was reached after 15 difficult days of a channel blackout, aimed in part at pushing boundaries in traditional television distribution. The pact marked a significant reversal after Disney had appeared dug in for a potentially protracted outage on the number 4 U.S. pay TV distributor. While specific contract deals were not disclosed, the deal contains one particular notable component: the full features of ESPN Unlimited, the highest level of ESPN's new direct-to-consumer offering, will be integrated into YouTube TV. What does that mean? It means that Brandon Thurston now has access to not just Monday Night Football, but every WWE premium live event. Is that not true?
Not yet. Not yet. I did ask ESPN, I mean, does this mean you get access to all this immediately by Survivor Series, which is coming up on the 29th? ESPN directed me to YouTube TV to confirm what the timing will be when that will become integrated and part of YouTube TV, or something that YouTube TV subscribers get access to. So I have emailed twice the YouTube TV press contact, and I've got no response yet. I did try just shortly before we came to air here to try to stream on demand Crown Jewel, which is the most recent PLE. And you look at the list of carriers that they say that you can authenticate into, and you've got DirecTV, Fubo TV, Hulu Plus Live TV, Spectrum TV, or Verizon Fios customers. YouTube TV not listed there. I was not able to authenticate at this point. Will YouTube TV subscribers be able to stream Survivor Series for free, for no added cost, is a question yet to be answered.
Well, given my history of asking questions that you don't get answers to, if the answer is no, they don't respond. If it was yes, they would have got back to you in about 30 seconds. That would probably be my answer, that as of November 19th, instead of the slogan being ready, set, stream, it's ready, set, wait a couple of weeks.
By 2026, by WrestleMania, maybe.
Okay, well, there you go. It's a timetable, folks. the shareholder lawsuit, Brandon has been reporting on its timeline of events and the depositions that have been going fast and furious. They have brought in Stephanie McMahon, Paul Levesque, and you have found new items that are at the source of contention here, including the potential deletion of Signal messages and a secret chat group. Please tell us more, Brandon. This definitely piqued my interest.
So what we have here is, so this is a shareholder lawsuit. It's in Delaware. Many of the filings for this case are sealed. And then sometimes later, if there are filings under seal, they end up publishing a public version of them. So anyway, we've got partial filings related to what's going on here. Anyway, there's litigation happening between the two sides of attorneys about messages that were sent over Signal regarding the merger, or just among these people in a given time frame, which is they're collecting discovery here, right? The plaintiffs are now into this discovery phase where they want all sorts of communications between a certain time frame from people like Vince McMahon, Stephanie McMahon, Paul Levesque, Nick Khan, Ari Emanuel, etc. There's concern, though, that apparently these individuals were using the app Signal to communicate. Now, there's nothing wrong with using Signal outright, but it seems that
unless you're leading the Department of Defense.
Well, that's a different issue altogether.
Looping in journalists.
Yes, yes. You need to be careful with that. Now, but if you're negotiating a merger, you may be required to preserve certain communications in the event that there are shareholder lawsuits, like there tend to be over such M&A transactions. And it looks like they were using Signal. And as people may know who use Signal, you have an auto delete feature that you can turn on so that, like, say every week or every day or every hour, the messages just automatically delete. So and there's also allusions here to text messages that Nick Khan may have deleted, which seem to be aside from Signal, maybe just standard text messages. So that's at issue here. What the plaintiffs want is they want to also extend this window in which they are able to request documents from the defendants, because they want to be able to do so after they interview Nick Khan under oath, Ari Emanuel, Mark Spiro. All that is yet to happen. That's set to happen in December.
So what you're telling me is that Vince McMahon and his deletion of text messages could be causing him even more headaches in this separate case.
Who knows? I mean, the plaintiffs want to get these messages. They want to get all these communications from the time so that they can support their case, their allegation that Vince McMahon predetermined this merger. He decided ahead of time that he was only going to make a deal with Endeavor, and he just pretended to negotiate with everybody else because they knew everybody else was not going to allow him to stay because of the sexual misconduct allegations against him, which he denies, and that only Ari Emanuel was going to allow him to stay. That's their theory, and that's what they're looking to support here. The other thing that you alluded to, they apparently had a group chat, possibly named Stunner.
Can't write this stuff.
So they've asked the plaintiffs have asked the defendants to go back and investigate whether there were any such group chats, possibly with the code name Stunner, and try to gather records from any devices belonging to people such as Paul Levesque, Nick Khan, and Brad Blum is introduced here. Brad Blum apparently was deposed on Friday.
A recurring character.
But to go back and get any communications records you can from any devices belonging to those people who have ever used Signal on them.
Yeah, just having all of us having read select text messages from Vince McMahon, the idea that there are conversations that should not be reserved for text message. No, this is a Signal type of conversation. You imagine this guy learning about Signal?
Oh, he's using Signal too, in according to these filings.
Yes.
And Stephanie, we don't know very much about what's been said in these depositions, but Stephanie apparently, I mean, judging by what the plaintiffs are saying here, the plaintiffs are basically saying that Stephanie has said that she used Signal to do things, including communicate with Nick Khan whom she was the co-president of WWE with for a good 5 months there. But she was, of course, an executive long before then. But she used Signal to at least communicate with Nick Khan and to communicate with her husband, Paul Levesque, of course, also a key executive.
Yeah. And Paul, board member. Paul, we're going to stage an event at headquarters. We're putting you in the Hall of Fame. Act yes. surprised.
If you don't want Signal.
Yes.
So they, I forgot what I was going to say. They're trying to get all that information. And the defendants, there's two sets of defendants, you might think. There's Vince, who has one set of attorneys, and there's all of the other defendants, who are Nick Khan, Paul Levesque, George Barrios, and Michelle Wilson. They're defendants because they were board members at the time. Stephanie is not a defendant. I take it because she left the board and the company immediately upon Vince's forced return, as you may remember. But all of those board members allegedly went along with Vince's scheme.
But even with the timeline of Stephanie being technically out of the company, she still may have been part of some of these conversations.
Right. There may be records, and she's purportedly a witness to the case that the shareholders are making.
Just wrapping up on the TKO front, they also announced this week the completion of its accelerated share repurchase program to repurchase $800 million of its outstanding Class A common stock. And they stated as well that the company paid $800 million to Morgan Stanley and Company and received an initial delivery of over 3.1 million shares of Class A common stock. The agreement period ended November 17th, and the company received an additional 1,053,960 shares as final settlement of the agreement.
What is an accelerated share repurchase and commencement trading plan? Can you explain that to me?
It's dropping a ton of cash for the remaining outlining stock.
It's when a company buys its own stock, which reduces the supply of the stock, which increases the demand for the stock, which increases the price of the stock. TKO shares up 2% today. Let's see, where are they on the last 5 days? Oh, they're up 4.5%. Well, this market is not doing quite as well over the same period of time. So a great time, as it often has been, to be a TKO shareholder. And you've also gotten your dividend doubled recently.
What does this mean for Dwayne Johnson? That's the question.
It means his stock is more valuable. It means he's getting doubled the dividends that he was promised to get at the beginning of his ownership of TKO shares. He's being compensated heavily with TKO shares. He's getting an installment every month of shares for his service. Another board, he is a TKO board member.
On a side note, there's a New York Times profile on Matt Bellany from The Town, and there is like a paragraph just eviscerating Dwayne Johnson. It is quite the read if you want to check that out. All right, it's time to move on over to your favorite three letters, TNA. What a week they had. And I include Brandon's reporting last week, because that will work its way into this discussion. When you reported Bound for Glory's attendance after you secured the records from the Songa Center in Lowell, Massachusetts. And they got
last week's episode for more about that.
Yes, we went through all of that. Ross Foreman, who is their head of PR, gave Brandon a statement. And then they go into their return, because after Bound for Glory, their big night at Lowell's Songa Center, they took 4 weeks off. But they were back for three consecutive nights at Full Sail University. The demand was high. What was TNA going to come out of the gates and do? Well, on the first night, they after the long-awaited coronation of Mike Santana at Bound for Glory, they took the title off him in a spectacular fashion and then decided, man, do we have an angle to work. We're going to present that Mike Santana is so fed up with this company that we're going to work a Mike Santana walkout. So they had him no show the meet and greet afterwards, because nothing is going to get over the storyline like upsetting 40 TNA diehards in Orlando. That's the way to go about things. Then the next day, PW Insider reports that Mike Santana has not arrived at Full Sail. Call time was an hour ago. He's not responding to their calls or text messages.
Uh-oh.
Mike, where are you? Now, let's set aside the fact that the day prior, Mike Santana had noted that he had just reached 1,000 days of sobriety and now this man has gone missing. Let's just put that aside as any kind of bad taste because the stupidity outweighs the taste of all of this. Then, several hours later, PW Insider does report that he is now backstage and Fightful Sean Ross Sapp chimes in, stating, quote, "The Mike Santana news about him not answering calls is a work. The same official at TNA tried to feed that to us and provided it elsewhere. Normally, we wouldn't blast something like that, but this is the first time someone in an official capacity reached out and provided us a worked angle in an effort to specifically work our audience." We'll elaborate more on that this weekend. Utter insanity that they attempted to do this. So after all of this, going to these lengths to try and pull the wool over everyone's eyes, the payoff, we go into Turning Point on Friday night. No Mike Santana. The announcers, where's Mike Santana? Steve Macklin's going to go it alone tonight against Nick Nemeth and Frankie Kazarian. And then several minutes into the match, a car pulls up outside Full Sail, and you would not guess who gets out of the driver's seat. It is Mike Santana to the rescue, wrapping up his arm, and in he goes and proceeds to pin Frankie Kazarian, thus ending one of the stupidest ideas that TNA has had in quite some time, really bringing us back to some of the highs or lows, you would argue, in its Spike TV heyday. So they decide, again, someone in an official capacity that goes out of their way.
What does that mean, official capacity? Does that mean this came from a PR representative? Does that mean this came from an executive?
It means that, to me, it's not just like it was some random person on the TNA roster that's just coming here.
This wasn't a rumor that you know, somebody who wasn't sure about it or who isn't an official. It's not something that was just slid by talent, sounds like.
So we don't know who this individual was. They did not reach out to you or I don't believe. No, they weren't contacting Brandon no, Thurston.
They didn't try to feed this to me.
Mike who? I don't care.
I know who Mike Santana is. I was on a couple shows with them. Yeah.
Yes, that's true. So here is where I tie it in. And there is more that we'll get into here because then they outdid themselves on Saturday. But on Friday, at least. So they try throughout the day to convince you that their top star is pissed off like you, the fan base, was on Thursday night. So let's really make this feel legitimate so that when he shows up midway through a nondescript tag match main event, boy, did we get them. Boy, did we work that audience. And this is like your idea of trying to work the media is just, to me, you are going to desperate means. And the other side of that, again, ties into our conversation we had last week, because when you report how many tickets were sold for Bound for Glory, and then it's in grand disparity to the number announced by TNA, and a Ross Foreman comes and explains, you're not getting the whole picture. There's this and this and this. I'm sorry, but by you being attached now to this company that's trying to go work the media, when it comes to a story like this, I'm sorry, I'm not putting a whole ton of credence in whatever TNA is stating. Because you have mortgaged that credibility to me when you are trying to work your angles. And that's your level of association with the media, of how little you think of them, that we can just work our silly little angles that had zero payoff to it. And it just means that whatever you say on the record, I'm going to be skeptical of.
Yeah, it's jeopardizing your credibility.
And for what? Like, what was the grand, like, what was the transaction? If you're TNA, what did you get in response for this?
Being around,
like, an angle no one talked about, and they just laughed at you. That was the public's response, was laughing at TNA, of the people that actually bought this show.
Now, I haven't been around the people who likely made this decision, but just being around wrestling for decades, it's so easy to imagine this idea coming to the table, and apparently being approved, that what if we work everybody, and then it'll be such a big deal, everybody will be talking about it. Like, this stuff is so, I don't know, this mentality is so ingrained.
It's the ultimate in the bubble type of thinking. Like, you are broadcasting towards the smallest number of people that would be following this online on PW Insider and Fightful throughout the day. Like, when you think about, like, the lengths of who you are trying to hoodwink, it's like you've totally lost sight of the plot.
Is there a line somewhere before this? I don't know about this situation in particular, where it is okay. Like, there's something to unpack here, and like, people don't want to be worked to this extent. But I don't know. When I think MJF has done some things like this, right? Where like, it does draw people in different variations and less aggressive variations of this, where it does work to suck people in. I'm struggling to think of examples, obviously, but definitely the fan and certainly the journalists do not want to be worked and literally lied to. We want a definitive line of separation where we get what you're doing on television is a form of fiction, perhaps. But what you tell me about what's actually happening and the truth, that has to be the truth.
I think it comes down to how much, again, it is in a bubble. If you're TNA, of course, you're trying to think of any means to get your stories over, because, you know, if fans buy in, the idea is that it will connect on a higher level. But I think if you are TNA as a company, that you have to look at, let's save our lives, because there is going to come a time that we will want to have some kind of substance when we say something that is serious, and it will be the boy who cried wolf. Like, if I was Fightful, I would not be taking any substance of anything a TNA official told me without multiple checks on what they are telling me is on the level. Like, I would have no trust if this is what they thought to try and pull over us by going this direction. And again, I just don't look at it as fans generally. I think if you can surprise them, like the Seth Rollins deal or something like that, I think they enjoy that type of thing. But again, it's like, did this add one buy to Turning Point?
The Seth Rollins thing is an example of that, isn't it?
It is one where they tried to get out the information that this was legitimate, but fortunately the real information got out too.
One obvious problem with this is that you had him no show a meet and greet as part of this work, right? Where we're paying fans didn't get what they were hoping for, or didn't get what they paid for, perhaps. I don't know how this meet and greet worked out, but you're advertising something and then taking it away for the sake of your, you know.
Yeah. You either cost yourself money or you disappointed fans by whatever. They paid to see Mike Santana and you inserted somebody else that they did not pay to meet after the show, for instance. Like, there's no gain to doing something like that.
Yeah. Now, there are fans who I will defend stuff like this and will defend and will criticize people who break stories and expose that wrestlers are really not injured like they say they are, to say, you know, these dirt sheets shouldn't be, you know, spoiling things for the fans. Oh, you've heard Triple H say things to this effect, that the fans spoil things for themselves by trying to know too much, and they should allow these things to happen. These things should happen. We should be the ones in control of all the information. I'm paraphrasing.
Well, we're also talking about an era where I think that your fan base generally, I think they have a lot more care for a lot of these performers, that if you're indicating that someone has sustained some debilitating injury and it's part of the story, that I think it's your job to be able to separate fact from fiction. And for the company's standpoint, it's their job to, if they want to keep something quiet, to then keep it quiet. Like, it's not of our interest to push your stories. And I think there is an audience, a pretty significant amount, that do come to these outlets to find out what is real and what's not. And I don't think the wrestling industry that's making money off of these characters get to dictate the terms of what is allowed to be reported or not. That's not your laneway. It's ours.
And there's a disdain that exists, that wrestling companies,
you're ruining the magic,
wrestling don't get to control all the information.
Yeah.
Because, well, there's certainly a tradition decades ago where they did control all the information.
And I would say there's a lot more thought that goes into this than is actually realized in terms of these surprises that generate the same reaction. Like, did Seth Rollins get any less of a reaction at SummerSlam because that news was out in advance? I don't think so. And if anything, like the story of X, Y, or Z is teased for showing up as a surprise, I think that's only going to enhance interest to actually tune in if you think you're getting something like that. That I don't think any of this actually impacts business. I think it's an obsession that the wrestling business generally has about being in control and having one leg up on your audience, that you are the ones manipulating the audience and not vice versa.
It's a longing for the way that things used to be better.
Well, you would think that would be enough for TNA, but then they capped off their weekend Saturday by throwing out fan Jacob Cohen. Saturday night, just to let everyone know, I've been asked by TNA management to leave the show tonight. There was a belief that I was filming the show. I showed them that I was not. They returned and asked me to leave anyways. Wasn't allowed to talk to anyone further, so that's all for me for tonight. Added bonus, I was told I would not be receiving a refund. Now, in TNA's defense, they have reached out to Jacob Cohen, and on Monday he said that he spoke to TNA officials. Again, unnamed officials. Don't know if this has anything to do with other stories. They apologize for what happened and have taken a few steps to remedy the situation so issues like this don't occur in the future. It's easy to make a mistake. Yes, the mistake of, hey, you're filming this show. He shows them their phone. No, I am not. And they still throw him out. I appreciate them taking the steps to fix it. I also want to thank everyone who reached out to me. Just a disaster of three nights, I feel, for TNA. So
for people who don't know, Jacob Cohen on Twitter.
Goes to all the Florida shows, a regular at NXT shows, regular at TNA shows. And, yeah, he would go to tapings and would usually post like...
And he spoils the events. He
doesn't even spoil them, though. He would post like the match that was occurring, but wouldn't include the finish or... the results, for instance. Like he would put up, Jake something versus Mance Warner.
He's not letting the wrestling company control all the information.
Which again, you buy a ticket to a show, unless they could confiscate all these phones at the door. Like WWE does that for these comedy shows and roasts. Like you can then incur that expense if you want to do that. But if you're selling tickets, everyone's within their right to take photos and you can post, like they have no aversion to showing all of their followers on social media and all the engagement they get. You don't get to control that information. You're selling a ticket and people are free to, like, he wasn't filming anything. To me, he was not breaking any terms, but this only added to an already bad weekend of PR for TNA. And it was more so surprising because this stuff used to be a lot more common with TNA, and of this kind of run of TNA, like they have received a lot more positive fan response and PR than not. And this past week, it really did to me put TNA, cast them in a very negative light.
I think the solution that we need maybe for every fan who attends a wrestling show, they need to sign an NDA so that none of this information can get out. More NDAs, I think, wrestling is going in the right direction in that regards, but even more NDAs.
What if they had an early call time for all fans so they could go over chants in advance? They could rehearse all the chants that are allowed.
Yes. Yes.
There's levels to becoming a fan. You have to agree to items 1 through 10. This is how you act as a fan that is paying us money.
Yes.
That's how it works. Also reported this week, this was actually some good news for TNA. John Elba reporting that TNA's media rights.
Wait a minute. There is one seemingly good news story here.
Yes, it turns out Impact is officially going to be streamed on Jacob Cohen's phone. No, he is. TNA's media rights future has been a major talking point in the wrestling industry over the course of the past 6 months and detailed on a potential timeline for a deal. High-ranking television industry sources have indicated to the Takedown on SI that there is an expectation that TNA will announce a new media rights deal by the end of 2025, if not sooner. SI reached out to TNA officials about when an expected deal would be announced, and they said there are no further updates. Carlos Silva, where is the... they had specifically mentioned... AMC as a potential landing spot, which would be a new potential bidder for TNA's rights. I mean, we've heard A&E thrown around, CW, and you know, it would seem like there's certainly a lot of multiple interest levels in TNA. AMC.
So John Alba's report says that they've learned that a television industry sources, another network with no current W ties, has been pursuing TNA's media rights, indicating that AMC has emerged as a potential landing spot for TNA.
Yes. So, I mean, the year is winding down. We got like 5 weeks left. So we will see if TNA gets a better spot. Is AMC a significant upgrade to Access TV, not taking into account whatever the financials of such a deal would be?
Yes. Yes, it would be.
Do you get AMC networks?
Probably. I would have to check. Probably.
That's my gauge.
This is the home of Mad Men. Come on. So it is a pretty widely covered cable channel. AMC Networks is publicly traded, so we do know as of last December, they were in, I believe it is 60 million homes, 61 million homes. So they're no doubt in less now, but ESPN, Disney disclosed that ESPN is in, I believe, 61 million homes. So ESPN is going to be a network that is standard. It's going to be about as widely covered as possible. So it's up there, maybe a few million less than the most widely carried cable channels, but it would be probably double the coverage of Access TV, which is in probably like a third, maybe close to a quarter of U.S. households. This would double that.
Wrestle Kingdom 20 has sold out its allotment of tickets. They have not attached a number to this, but typical for the Wrestle Kingdom setup is about 40,000 people, which they did sell out for the first night in 2020. They stated that with the retirement of the legendary Hiroshi Tanahashi and the pro wrestling debut of Olympic judo gold medalist Aaron Wolf, Wrestle Kingdom 20 set a record pace when tickets went on sale in October. On November 16th, 7 weeks in advance of the event, it was official. It was announced that Wrestle Kingdom 20 is officially sold out of its configuration in the Tokyo Dome, making it the best-selling event in the 20-year history of Wrestle Kingdom. Work is currently being undertaken to add more seats to the outfield area and floor of the Tokyo Dome, and announcements will be made soon about limited extra seating. Who's a draw?
Retirement, and Tanahashi's retirement specifically. Maybe Aaron Wolf.
Aaron Wolf maybe can lay claim to a portion of this, but yes, this is the Tanahashi retirement leading the way, that this is going to be one of the most successful New Japan shows in years, and is probably going to prop up their entire quarter, which you just got a rundown of the third quarter results for New Japan. Yes. Or for Bushiroad, rather, which encompasses New Japan and Stardom in its sports division.
Right. So this is, this division overall is not growing. And that's largely because of New Japan. So what's in this division? I believe it's just New Japan and Stardom at this point. Now, of Bushiroad's entire company, the sports division is a pretty small minority. There's a lot of other things, entertainment and anime things that I don't understand. So they reported last week what is to a calendar the third quarter. They have a fiscal year, which I won't get into. They reported $9.5 million, the equivalent of, for the quarter, which is down from the prior year only slightly. But you can see in the grand trends of this company's this division's revenue, it's mostly down to the right, and that's what is it? It's New Japan, and most of New Japan's business is live events, is attendance and ticket sales, and that has largely been down. We do see some ups and downs here, but we know that the G1 Climax was down about 8%. This quarter was down 8%. Stardom, however, they did call out. Now, they didn't give numbers, but they did say that Stardom's attendance and revenue and profitability was up. We do have, according to the numbers that Stardom itself puts out there, they averaged 918, which is a lot better than last year where they averaged 687. But you can tell from the average attendances here, we have, you know, New Japan getting close to 2,000, Stardom closer, you know, all these numbers on average are under 1,000 for each quarter of the last 3 years. So, you know, Stardom is I believe, you know, at one point I was looking to look at, you know, how much revenue Stardom was making. It's like maybe 10 million on an annual basis versus New Japan's making more like 30 or 40 million. So it gives you some proportion that New Japan is maybe like four times the size in terms of revenue generation. So that's why you're seeing, you know, stagnant revenue here, because New Japan makes up a much larger piece of this. Now, it appears we will not know whether this segment is profitable like we used to. There were some quarters where it was unprofitable, but most of the quarters have been profitable. It looks like Bushiroad has given up on reporting profitability by division. So no longer will you know that information, although they do report for the company overall.
Always a sign of good things. We're going to take out the whole part about whether we're making money or not.
Yeah.
It is going to be interesting later this year to see, number one is like, what are the tourists, situation like for a Wrestle Kingdom? Like, do they see like an upswing in people that are traveling over for this show? Cause it is sort of a destination type of show that a number had this happened in, you know, the late 2010s or 2020, you would think a lot of people would be inspired to go travel for the show. And if Stardom's year end show gets any kind of bump just because of the attention that's going to be on New Japan, or if these are largely separate audiences that are coming for these shows.
You'd think that they would know that information now if they have, if they know where these orders are coming from based on what the credit cards are. Yeah.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, Rewind Away looks at some of the biggest retirement matches in wrestling history, featuring matches involving Terry Funk, Ric Flair, Sting, and Tam Nakano. Plus, John Pollock and Brandon from New Jersey get together to look back at season 4 of 90210, a season that brought you John Sears, Lucinda Nicholson, David's meth addiction, and Brandon moving in on Kelly Taylor. Book Club will cover This Book Is All Elite by Keith Elliott Greenberg. Plus, we have reviews of TNA Turning Point, UFC 322, and so much more. $6 gets you all this at postwrestlingcafe.com.
The last thing we're going to talk about is the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame. The issue came out on Friday, and there were 8 inductees into this year's class, 7 voted upon, and then 1 historical addition. It was led by Spiros Arion with 78% of the vote. You need 60% in your given region for induction. He was on the bubble this year. If he didn't get above 50%, he would have been off, so a lot of people were pushed to vote for Spiros Arion. Gran Hamada with 75.2%. Doral Dixon in the Mexican category, 74.8%. CM Punk, 65.5%. Cody Rhodes, 64.4%. Sabu, 64.1%. And Bobby Bruns, 62.7%. Just missing out by several votes were Hayabusa, Junkyard Dog, June Byers, Jesse Ventura, Jose Taras, and Ted Turner.
Yes. And we did have someone from WWE acknowledging their induction.
It was not CM Punk. So that eliminates things. Cody Rhodes did make a acknowledgement. I think it was a quote tweet that he did acknowledge his induction into the Hall of Fame and becoming one of the few father-son combos to be into the Observer Hall of Fame.
Yes, that's true. I was surprised Sabu made it in.
I can't remember. Did you vote for Sabu?
I only voted for Cody and Punk.
Okay, I voted for Cody, Punk, and Sabu. I voted for Bobby Bruns and not the... I did not vote in the other parts of the world or Mexico sections as well. Raul Pauli was the French promoter that was a historical addition. So he was not voted on. But yeah, he was he got the mysterious Observer Historical Committee that gave him the stamp of approval. But I had voted for Junkyard Dog, June Byers, and Jesse Ventura. So they were all fairly close and not going in. Next year, added to the ballot include Kenta, Dave Bautista, Great Sasuke, Tam Nakano, and the obvious no-brainer, Kane.
Kane. Yeah.
I mean,
does his political career get support his case?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's going to put him over the top. Mm-hmm. I mean, progressive mind in an increasingly shrinking world. I think that Glenn Jacobs, model politician throughout the pandemic, really led the way. I think that's going to put him in.
I did ask for Batista. I told Dave I would. Did you? I turned my ballot in. Yeah.
Does that, if you advocate for someone, are you inclined to vote for them?
I think almost have to.
I think so too. Yeah. I think Dave Batista is like a really interesting candidate, and one that he was on the ballot so early and was one that got, he fell off the ballot so quickly, and I'm glad that he's at least going to be revisited. Kent is a real interesting candidate because he did influence a lot of people. But he also had
is that a run that's a help or a hurt?
It hurts. Like the WWE stuff hurts. The New Japan run, I think, hurts. He didn't do anything special. He's having a he's definitely having a revival this year in NOAA, but it's going to be the influence and obviously his work in NOAA pre-WWE that is going to be. And there's certainly a case for Kenta. Like, he influenced a lot of people, as you can see from, you know, the 2000s and what got borrowed or outright stolen from him.
The GTS, yeah. I mean, Kenta was somebody who's coming up like right in the prime days of my tape trading, and I was like, who is this Kenta Kobayashi, whose name is just like Kenta Kobashi's name? I remember him having a match with Tatsuhito Takeiwa, and I think it was 0-1. And he's somebody who showed fire, and it was like, whoa, he's going to be good. He's just wearing the wingtip boots at that time, not into the kick pads yet. And then I think there was a Differ Cup in 2003 where he was teamed with Kotaro Suzuki, and they had like a great match with the DET guys and like one of the third place match of that tournament. So anyway, he's, you know, for a few years there, he's among the best wrestlers in the world, maybe the best, arguably.
And the return to the ballot of Dick Murdoch next year.
Yes. What was the commentary about Dick Murdoch's re-entry to the ballot?
Let me get the exact quote here.
Certain things from his past. Dick Murdoch's no longer with us, but certain things.
This is a paragraph that could only exist in a professional wrestling Hall of Fame. Like, just imagine this was like the discussion in, like, I don't know, the Major League Baseball ballot. In addition, and this could be the killer, it was reputed that Murdoch was a member of the KKK. People said this, although it is not proven, but I expect that will make things very difficult. If you take that away, if doing a lot of work in that sentence, he is a very strong candidate based on his ring work and how well he did in prior ballots. So, you know, there's the Klan stuff or the loose affiliation. Regardless, some have said he was a card carrying member. Will make for interesting discussions next year about Dick Murdoch. But there you go. That is the Observer Hall of Fame class. Who fell off this year? They got less than 10%. The tag team of Dusty Rhodes and Dick Murdoch, FTR, Drew McIntyre, Los Infernales, Les Kellett, and Bill Mercer. So Bill Mercer did not get the bump after his passing.
Bob Caudle is on the ballot, did not make it in. He just passed away.
Yeah,
probably after
the
due date. So maybe a death bump for him next year.
Yeah, I'm just scanning here. How did Bob Caudle do? He was kind of scanning here, not finding his name. But he was on the ballot. Oh, he was pretty low, 14.7%. He actually fell a little bit. So we'll see. We'll see. Bob Caudle was 95 years old.
Yeah.
Well, there you have it, everybody. That's going to wrap up this week's edition of Pollock and Thurston. We covered a lot in this this hour plus. And we'll take one super chat here. Jake from the Windy City. TNA trying to manufacture their own yes movement, but they don't understand. They're not generating interest. People are laughing at how bad they are. Okay, so maybe a commentary from Jake. Not a great week for TNA, but hey.
They have a TV deal on the way, maybe.
Perhaps. Maybe they'll come out and they'll say, hey, everything that we did it was all a work. It was all a work. Everything was a work. Here's Jacob Cohen, the new director of authority on TNA television. This is what I'm going to do, okay? Every time the word work comes up now, instead I'm going to replace work with lie, okay? Because that's what it is, okay? Every headline, whenever I want everyone to substitute work for lied, okay? TNA lied to its audience. You got us. That is it for us. Brandon, where can people find all of your great work that you are churning out around the clock?
With help from Jason Umpresser, we have lots of coverage happening at WrestleNomics.com. A lot of it is for free. We have coverage of that we went over today, but there'll be more. We're doing more frequent reporting that I think is going well. That's all at WrestleNomics.com. And, of course, you can get access to all of the big TV ratings reports along with various analysis of the wrestling business for each and every episode of Dynamite Collision, Raw, SmackDown, and NXT at Patreon.com/WrestleNomics and on Substack as well.
You can find all of my work at postwrestling.com. Over the last week, we did an article and an audio podcast looking at 20 years since Eddie Guerrero passed away. If you want to check that out, it's free on the Post Wrestling YouTube channel or on our free podcast feed as well. And then I'll be back tonight with Wei Ting. It's a three-hour Dynamite in Boston, so we will be an hour.
3 hours? Oh, because Collision is preempted.
Yes. So you get 2 hours of Dynamite, 1 hour of Collision, and then the main event, Rewind to Dynamite with Wei Ting and I. We will be live for all cafe members and then the review up shortly thereafter. You can find us every Wednesday, 1 Eastern, here on the WrestleNomics and Post Wrestling channels. Have a great week.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.